I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KNX News 97.1 FM,
this is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, 46 more days until Inauguration Day and Donald Trump back in the White House then. On today's Countdown 2024, whether it's Pete Hegseth, Ron DeSantis, or someone else entirely that ends up leading the Defense Department in the Trump administration, MAGA World has big changes planned for the American military. So we'll take a closer look at some of those plans. And why are the donors financing the Trump transition being kept secret? And what could that mean for potential conflicts of interest and corruption down the road? But first this.
First, buddy, Elon Musk was roaming the halls of Congress today, pitching his plans to slash government spending to lawmakers. Musk, who, along with fellow billionaire Vivek Ramaswamy, is poised to lead the Department of Government Efficiency for President-elect Trump. And Musk said that he wants to get rid of all federal tax credits. That would ostensibly include the $7,500 tax credit for purchasing an electric vehicle, which, if killed off by the Trump administration, would go a long way to helping Musk over his auto manufacturing rivals. The EV tax credit was seen as helping upstart automakers to catch up with Tesla's industry-leading EV sales. Tesla, of course, owned by Elon Musk.
Los Angeles Times publisher Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, who made waves during the campaign by refusing to allow the paper's editorial board to endorse Kamala Harris, says the Times is building a so-called bias meter that will appear alongside online stories at some point next year. Now, the digital tools will offer multiple viewpoints on a particular news item, as well as allow some version of comments to be integrated. It is just the latest sign of Soon-Shiong's retooling and moving LA Times coverage a little to the right ahead of Donald Trump's second term.
While many aspects of decorum in Congress have fallen by the wayside in recent years, the scene this morning in a House committee was absolutely wild. Texas Republican Congressman Pat Fallon engaged in an outright screaming match with Acting Secret Service Director Ronald Rowe during questioning about security provided for both Donald Trump and Joe Biden at a 9/11 memorial service in New York.
I was there going through the ashes of the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
I was there at Freshkills.
I'm not asking you that. I'm asking
there,
you,
Congressman.
Were you the special agent in charge?
To show respect for a Secret Service member that died on 9/11.
Oh, that you're trying to be.
Do not invoke 9/11 for political purposes.
I'm invoking this.
You are, sir.
Gentlemen,
no, you are out of line.
Ronald Rowe was deputy director of the Secret Service during the assassination attempt against Donald Trump over the summer.
No, Congress, you got to love it. Pete Hegseth appears to be treading water on his would-be nomination to serve as the Trump administration Secretary of Defense. But even if Hegseth ultimately drops out, there are a lot of politically charged changes likely coming to the Pentagon. Corey Shockey is Director of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Before that, she served multiple roles in government at the Defense Department, State Department, and National Security Council. Corey, thanks for being with us.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I guess the first question is, do you think, despite all the protests that Hegseth is making to the contrary, that he's ultimately not going to make it as Defense Secretary?
You know, it's really hard to say. I would look at Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa as the bellwether, because she's a 23-year military veteran, and a lot of other senators are going to watch what she says and vote accordingly, because she has so much credibility on this issue. But I certainly think he's losing altitude rather than gaining it.
I have a question for you about a piece that you recently wrote for The Atlantic. It was titled, What Trump Doesn't Understand About the Military. Politicizing the U.S. Armed Forces won't just hurt democracy, it will make the military weaker. Why do you say that?
Because one of the great things about the American military is that we don't bring politics into the workplace. You know, it's hard to know what the politics are of senior people, and that makes it, or even of Lance Corporal Johnson. And that actually makes it easier for teams to work together in the military. This is such a febrile political moment in America, and you don't want to disrupt the work of a well-functioning team by injecting politics into it when what we want our military focused on is winning the nation's wars.
Let's say that Hegseth does manage to become the Secretary of Defense, and Mr. Trump has indicated that he so far backs him. Whether or not he really does, I guess we'll find out in the next few days, but that's what he has said publicly anyway. Hegseth has not had very good things to say about the role of women in the military. If he were to head that department, that doesn't portend a very good outcome for those who are serving, females who are serving in uniform, does it?
Well, there are 200,000 American women in military service right now, and we can't recruit the numbers we need without them. And so keeping women interested, keeping everybody interested who wants to serve our country and is willing to put their life on the line for our country is really important for recruiting and retention in the American military. The other thing I would say, though, is that it's actually Congress who runs defense policy. Women are in are assigned to combat units by law, and the secretary can't actually change that. He would have to persuade Congress to change that. And one of the reasons that nominees to run the Defense Department tend to be people with long legislative experience or major experience as senior leaders of an organization is because you actually have to persuade Congress to do what you think they ought to do. And somebody who struggles to get confirmed is unlikely to be able to persuade Congress of what they want to do with the department. So I think even if Mr. Hegseth gets confirmed, it will make it hard for him to be an effective secretary.
We are speaking with Corey Shockey, Director of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Switching gears just a little bit, Corey, what are your thoughts about Tulsi Gabbard as the possible Director of National Intelligence?
I think it's a bad choice, to be honest, because, you know, she went to Syria in support of Bashar al-Assad, who is unquestionably a villain. And, you know, if you have followed the war in Ukraine, you will know that the United States must have very highly placed Russian assets providing us information. And if those kinds of people lose confidence that we are going to keep their secrets and keep them safe, then they're not going to provide us the information we need to help navigate hard challenges. So I worry about her as the head of American intelligence because of her own judgment about what kind of information she would share and who she would be willing to sacrifice among American intelligence assets.
You know, Mr. Trump has said that on day one, he would launch the largest deportation effort the country has ever seen. And he's also not shied away from the notion that if necessary, he would use the U.S. military. And that would be regardless, I suppose, of who ends up being the Defense Department head. How would that actually look? How would the military even be used?
Yeah. Well, the active duty American military cannot be used for domestic law enforcement unless the president declares that there is an active insurrection in the country, which I think is pretty unlikely for an immigration issue, even as serious as the illegal immigration issue is. What I think is more likely is that the president would ask governors to provide National Guard troops who can be called into federal service to drive buses, to check documents, to do all sorts of activities to support the Immigration and Naturalization Service or Homeland Security in that realm. But the concern about that is that part of the reason the American public really likes its military is because they don't deal with it. They're not afraid of the American military. And so I do worry that if the military is used for something as politically divisive as deportations, that it will harm recruiting and retention in the force. And we actually really need people in the American military to protect our nation.
Corey, could you see a scenario where President Trump would invoke the Insurrection Act?
So he threatened to do that in the summer of 2020. And what stayed his hand was then Secretary of Defense Mark Esper talking to governors to persuade them not to support an Insurrection Act invocation, talking to members of Congress. So he raised the political stakes to the president for doing it. And having civilian cabinet members be involved in that political process is how American government works well. And so leaving the military out of it and having a political fight about do we want to do this is actually the right way to navigate a lot of these fraught issues. I personally think invocation of the Insurrection Act should be very narrowly invoked for, you know, if the country's under attack, if people are taking up arms against the federal government. Like, there's a reason that it hasn't been invoked since, what, 1990-something, President George H.W. Bush invoked the Insurrection Act in support of the governor of California during riots in L.A. That's the last time it was done, and it was done at the request of a governor, which is...
Finish your thought. Go ahead.
No, I was finished. I'm sorry.
Okay. Corey Shockey, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Just like most things about Donald Trump, his presidential transition has been quite unconventional so far. We will explain why that matters next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. Presidential transitions are strange times in politics. The rules and oversight are a little looser and murkier amid the chaos of one administration leaving and another getting set up. But the transition period of President-elect Donald Trump is turning out to be unprecedented for a number of different reasons. First off, the identity of the donors that are financing the Trump transition. They've been secret. Then there's the FBI vetting issue, as it looks like most, if not all, Trump administration appointees won't be going through the traditional FBI background checks.
So this has all kinds of implications for conflicts of interest and even possible corruption. Max Steyer is the founding president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service. Now, that is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with a mission to recruit and support the public servants working in the federal government. Max, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, obviously, it stands to reason that the public would like to know who exactly is spending money and why they're spending that money directed toward the federal government for different programs or transitions or whatever. But is there a way to force that if an incoming administration, Trump or anyone else for that matter, decides it doesn't want to?
So it's worth taking a quick step back and focusing for a second on what the transition process is. It is still private conduct until inauguration, when you have the president-elect taking charge of the government. It is a critical process because running our government is so fundamental to our safety and well-being as a nation. And it's an incredibly complicated process. You note that understanding who is funding the transition process is really important. The expectation now is the Trump team will reveal their donors. They've made that commitment, at least verbally, although there is not any legal enforcement that would be possible of that.
I mean, how concerning is it to you? I mean, if they say they're going to do this, they say they're going to reveal who the donors are. So what if they don't? I mean, how concerning is that to you?
So I think it's important. There's nothing closer to actually running our government than putting together the government, which is what the transition is about, and understanding who's funding it should be something that the public has as much information about as possible, because it is ultimately about who is in charge of and who is influencing positions of enormous public trust. So I do think it's incredibly important. It's not the only area of transparency we should be focused on. In addition to who's funding it, we ought to know who's going into the political appointee jobs that are so vital to the running of our government. We will know for those that are Senate confirmed, but there are, you know, over 2,000 political jobs that an administration gets to make that do not require Senate confirmation. And again, there's no requirement for disclosure about who those people are. You might find out who they are when they are in the news, but there is no other mechanism for providing that information on a regular basis. So your basic point is a right one. The public deserves to know. Transparency when you're dealing with public responsibilities is really a critical element of our democracy and of accountability. And we have a system that has relied on norms to have that transparency. I would say we need some reforms to make sure that it's actually legally required as well.
Max, so that our listeners have a better understanding of what we are all talking about, when we talk about contributors, funders of the transition, what exactly is involved in that? What does the transition involve?
Yeah, no, it's a really important question that you're asking here. And again, it's, you know, as kids, we learn that part of our gift to the world was the peaceful transfer of power. It's the, you know, most concrete demonstration of our democracy. You know, George Washington not being a king, but being someone who handed off leadership of our country. And in order to accomplish that in the world we live in today, it's a very complex operation. Our federal government involves, upwards of 3.5 million people when you talk about the military and the civilian services. Worth noting that on the civilian side, there are 2 million civil servants. That's about the same size as it was in the 1960s. So headcount has not gone up. But you're talking about 450 operating units. You're talking about $6 trillion to spend. And you're talking about really important issues, from our physical safety in the national security arena to our ability to drink water safely, buy groceries, and know that the groceries are going to be safe. And the list goes on and on and on. So the transition is fundamentally about how a new administration puts together a new government. And it's the greatest takeover of any organization on the planet. And it's also the point of maximum vulnerability for our nation. So the process we're talking about here is the actual operation, the hundreds of people that have to be involved in deciding who are going to be in those 4,000 political appointments that are made. The people who are trying to figure out what's happening in each of those agencies so that the people who ultimately come in to take charge have real-time information and who are setting up the White House and all the other operations that the president-elect needs to be able to run the government effectively. It's a big deal.
Max Steyer is the founding president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service. He is going to be sticking around. We'll finish off our conversation with him next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Max Steyer, CEO of the Partnership of Public Service, remains with us to close out today's show. Max, a Trump aide has apparently claimed that his transition would not accept donations from foreigners. Do you believe that?
I have to believe it. I mean, I'm glad that they're making that commitment. It is fundamental, again, in thinking about influence, that you don't want foreign dollars being involved in a transition process. And I hope they abide by that and that they demonstrate that they've done so.
But to go back to a point that you raised, I think, a little bit earlier in terms of enforcement, who enforces that if there's a violation of that? The incoming FBI, whoever ends up being the director, would, of course, be someone appointed by Mr. Trump, and the Justice Department head would be appointed by Mr. Trump. Who would actually look into that?
Well, I think you're raising a broader point of real importance, which is we should respect the fact that law enforcement should be able to operate independent of the president. And you know, this president has suggested that he will not respect that norm. The answer is there's not a lot you're going to be able to do. Congress hopefully will fulfill its constitutional duty of oversight to look at what's not working and potentially change the law. But the reality is there are not a lot of remedies here. If President-elect, who becomes President Trump, decides not to enforce the law, this is how democracies fall apart. So I think paying attention to it, transparency, the media has a very important role in focusing on what is happening here. And we need to identify weaknesses in our system and strengthen them going forward.
Max Dyer, CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and take care.
Coming up on Friday's Countdown 2024, Donald Trump's plan for mass deportations of illegal immigrants was discussed in the abstract for years, but it is about to get very real for a lot of people in California. We're talking with a former immigration judge and a DACA recipient who is worried that she will be sent to a country that she really doesn't know. Deportations and immigration on tomorrow's show. If you missed the show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.